Hi, my name is Stephanie Wambugu, and my new novel is titled Lonely Crowds. It will be published on July 29th by Little Brown.
Stephanie Wambugu's debut novel, Lonely Crowds, follows a friendship between Ruth and Maria from childhood to adulthood. Their decades-long friendship explores the nature of intimacy, desire, class, and time. I recently spoke with Stephanie Wambugu about the relationship between the two main characters and more. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Stephanie Wambugu. Could you give our listeners a description of Lonely Crowds?
Yes, Lonely Crowds is a Bildungsroman or a coming-of-age novel. It begins in the 80s, but the bulk of it takes place in the 90s, and it follows two women who meet as children when they're buying uniform for a Catholic girls' school that they've been accepted to on scholarship. They have a really consequential first encounter where they see one another from across the store, and basically they're linked for life to one another. But it's narrated by a character named Ruth, but it's equally concerned with her best friend, Maria. And they both become artists in the 90s art world.
Is there anything else that our readers should know about these young girls, young women?
Yeah, they have very interesting home lives. And I feel like they look to art as an outlet to kind of like find some of the warmth and connection maybe that they're not getting in their homes. They both are connected in a way that's at once platonic, but their relationship has like another deep subtext. And so a big question in the book is like, what is really the nature of their relationship? And I think that's the question that the book is most interested in.
I do have specific questions about Maria and Ruth, but I guess before we move on, Lonely Crowds is your debut novel. How did this novel come about? Where did it begin for you?
I started Lonely Crowds, I would say just the week just before I started my MFA. At Columbia. So I moved to New York City from the Hudson Valley where I did undergrad at Bard. And I started like kind of hearing the voice of this woman. I described it to a friend as feeling like someone walked down the street into my life. And it was this character, Ruth. And I immediately started narrating it from the first person as it's written now. It had a different title. It was sort of concerned mostly with her adulthood in the initial drafts, but it was always this character, and the character is the one like through line in the writing of the book. And I wrote it basically from the start of my MFA up until my third year. So I wrote it in the span of these 3 years when I was a student.
So Ruth latches on to Maria, foregoing even her own opinions in favor of Maria's. When introducing Maria to her father, she thinks, "I dreaded Maria's assessment of him. If she didn't like my father, I'd have to find a new father." You know, it's funny, but it's also kind of sad. I wonder about Ruth's sense of self-worth. Can you talk about her independence or perhaps her lack of it?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think that Ruth is a bit of a vessel, or I describe her sometimes as like this repository or this, she has a kind of vacancy that she's willing to let other people fill up her kind of like her idea of herself. And she hands over a lot of agency specifically to her friend Maria and lets her define her in lieu of defining herself. And I think that line that you quoted specifically about where Ruth expresses this anxiety about how Maria will assess her parents and her as a person is pretty emblematic of the character of their relationship in that she's really willing to let this other person completely, she's willing to be an avatar for other people. And I think that's was kind of an effective tool for writing a novel because you really get to inhabit other people's points of view through Ruth, even though she's the narrator, because she's so willing to give over the focus to someone else at different turns in the book.
I'd like to talk about the theme that emerges from the title of the book, and I'm curious about what the original title was, but let's talk about, you know, Lonely Crowds. I want to talk about loneliness despite being together. Ruth feels this as a child. Her mother tells her that she ate her twin in the womb. She looks forward to going back to school in September. She even feels it in her romantic relationships. I remember one. At one point, she thinks that James could act like he didn't need people because he didn't need people. Can you talk to me about this feeling of being alone together?
Yeah, I will say that I borrowed the title from, there's a book by the Marxist theorist Guy Debord called Society of the Spectacle. And I was in Columbia's library reading that book when I found this a bit about lonely crowds. And it's a bit about like the way that we all consume the same images and might all be reacting to the same mass culture. And so we're all looking in the same direction, but there's a feeling that you're not connected to your neighbor just because you're viewing the same thing. And so I thought that that was a really rich idea for describing like what it means to come of age and to maybe be part of a certain community or a part of a milieu and not necessarily feel close to the people around you, even though you're going through the same experiences, that it can feel very alienating to, I mean, to be a person in general, but to be a young person, especially in the environment that these women grow up in. But I think also that moving away from the initial, like where I initially borrowed the title from, it just, as I wrote the book, it felt more and more fitting for the experience that they were having, because it is like she has many opportunities for closeness, or you would think that she has opportunities for closeness. She has a lifelong best friend. She has this college boyfriend who seems to have a great deal in common with her. She eventually, you know, has a spouse who also seems to have a lot in common with her. And each time she gets close to someone, she feels actually her loneliness is more pronounced, and that there's kind of a chasm between her and other people that can't be, you know, crossed.
Lonely Crowds is set during the 90s, primarily, and it was a time free of technology like cell phones and streaming devices. Did you feel a sense of freedom about writing during a time without technology, or was it more of a challenge?
Absolutely. That's one of the big reasons why I said it when I did. I really didn't want to write about social media or the internet. And I think it's because I grew up, I've been online for more than half of my life. And I think many people in my generation can relate to the fact that technology has been so ubiquitous that it's like having a piece of furniture in a scene, in a story. You know, that's how common cell phones and the internet is for us. And so I thought, what if I just evacuated all of those things from the story and was able to just have people relate not over the phone. There are phone calls, of course, and there's a bit of email. There's like the advent of certain technologies in the book, but I really didn't want to write about what has already dominated so much of my life, which is being on the internet.
Ruth and Maria are both queer women living in the 1990s. They're met with varying amounts of support and acceptance. Can you talk about how their environment affected them throughout their adolescence and young adulthood? I mean, they went to a Catholic school and then both ended up working in the arts in college and beyond.
Yeah, I think it would have been a very different novel had Ruth not had someone like Maria to encourage her to kind of leave her past behind in a way. I think it's, you see her, she's literally following her friend. And I think that, yes, they do have support and like they have models. I wanted the book to obviously reflect, you know, the presence of like homophobia or some of the limitations that might've been placed on them. But I think for the most part, they are able to live openly. And the book is not primarily concerned with whether or not they can, you know, come out. It's more about like, is the relationship between them viable? Can the friendship between them last? But of course, like I wanted to be a legion and accurately capture the historical moment they were living through and say that, you know, it was a time before gay people could even get married. So that's obviously has a presence in the book too.
Early in the book, Ruth visits Kenya with her mother, where she visits her uncle and cousins. And aside from this scene, the reader doesn't get many glimpses of Ruth's ties to her mother's culture. Does Ruth feel connected with her Kenyan heritage at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think that scene is trying to grapple with that question. I think she looks around when she's on the trip and wonders, what does this all have to really do with me? And I think that's part of inheriting a culture that you haven't really lived in. You know, she's going to visit a country that she's basically unfamiliar with and will kind of remain unfamiliar with for the rest of her life. Although a lot of her mother's religiosity, parts of her parents' worldview, their attitudes toward work and, you know, like duty and a sense of obligation, all of those things are coming from Kenya and are being imported from the country that they're from, but Ruth is not experiencing them firsthand. So I wanted the trip to be a way of kind of getting closer to the source, whereas like for the rest of the book, it's just sort of this ambient context and in the background that she's not really, you know, she's never speaking the language. She's never even necessarily eating the food. It's unclear whether or not she ever goes back. So I think that scene, I wanted to show some of her ambivalence about being Kenyan and about being first generation in the United States.
Ruth and Maria are both artists. Were you influenced by any artists in writing this book?
Yes, I mean, there are a host of them that kind of come up in the book. I'll say like there's a bit about Coco Fusco, and it's all thinly veiled. There's like Coco Fusco is mentioned, Buford Delaney is mentioned. There are some other thinly veiled artists in the book, but one painting I think about over and over again is Cecily Brown's painting BFF, and I saw it at her show at the Met a couple of years ago when I was writing this novel. And one of Cecily Brown's mentors told her that if you make painting your best friend, you'll never be alone. And I think that that's a very good piece of advice. And it's also just a very beautiful painting. And I think that it's been a reminder to me while writing this book that the vocation of being an artist or being a writer can be a friend or a companion to you in a way that people can't always be.
Do you have a hope for what readers will take away from this book?
Goodness, I mean, I'm already so heartened by how people have responded to the book before it's even come out. I hope that what people will take away from the book is remembering its language, being interested in its style. And I hope that the story is enduring, and I hope that people will continue to read the story. I mean, it's a story set in a time that's not the time that I grew up in. I'm curious about the past. I hope that, you know, maybe if there's another generation that gets to encounter this book, I hope they'll be curious about the time I lived through too.
Well, the book is Lonely Crowds. Stephanie Wambugu, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Stephanie Wambugu, author of the book Lonely Crowds, which was published by Little Brown. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.